Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I'm your host, Ryan Airy. And today, unfortunately, we are not talking about a Dr. Doom pop-up coffee shop. We are finally getting to sit down and talk to you guys about Spider-Noir. So, fair warning, spoilers for Spider-Noir Season 1 are ahead. Now, not only are we going to talk about this season of Spider-Noir, but we're going to talk about some of the news about Spider-Noir, about how this show cost, wait for it, almost $500 million to create. I like the show, but I don't like the show a $500 million times. That's crazy. We're also going to talk about whether or not Spider-Noir represents a resurrection of the Sonyverse. If you watched our review video that went up last week, then you know that I really like the show. And in my opinion, it shows us not only how the Sonyverse could have been done right, but also how the multiverse saga could have been done right. We're going to talk about all of that and more, but first we're going to start with our opinions on the actual show. And I have a couple of guests to bring on here with me. The old regulars, you know these guys. Old Reliable himself, Mr. Alex Zalbin from the Comic Book Club podcast. How are you, Alex?
I'm great, Ryan. I wrote a song for Spider-Noir. Would you like me to sing it to you?
That depends. Can you sing?
I mean, you decide, I guess. But
okay, goes, all right. Well, let's
Spider-Noir, Spider-Noir, you can find him in a bar. I like the scene where he's on a car. Look out, see? Here comes Spider-Noir. What do you think?
I like it, especially the part about the bar. That was my favorite. That was
I'm good at rhymes. What can I say? I was born gifted
really happy.
Rhymes.
I'm very happy I get to be your friend. That's kind of just where I left off on this. I'm very pleased that we have a friendship.
Yes, me too, Ryan. Me too.
Okay, just a second. I got to fix an audio thing on my side because you're coming in real low. And next up, you know him as the guy who's always on break. I have not talked to him yet about this show, and I'm looking forward to it so much. Mr. Tommy Bechtold, what is going on, my friend?
Janet, listen. It's called Casual Friday, and for me, that means top and bottom is casual, and I won't take any notes. Ryan, how are you? I also wrote a song for Spider-Noir. It's to the theme of Closer by Nine Inch Nails. I want to web you like a Spider-Noir. That's it. That's the whole song.
I wondered how much you guys planned this ahead of time. That was excellent. That was
We've been
excellent.
Working on it all week.
Yeah.
I web myself today. Sorry. I just did Johnny Cash's cover of a Nine Inch Nails song.
Yes.
Sorry, Tommy. I stepped all over your joke. Stepped on it like it was a cigarette on the street in the show Spider-Noir. So let me know, what do you guys think about this show? Alex, you go first. What were your thoughts on the series? And again, spoilers abound.
Sure. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. Going into it, I was worried it was going to be a little bit of a disaster. And it kind of is, but in a pleasant way, where it starts as a very much straightforward film noir pastiche. And you can feel over the course of the 8 episodes, just Nicolas Cage pushing into it more and more and more, where I don't know, like he takes control of the thing. And that's fun. Like, I like Nicolas Cage. I think he is a wild man. And when you let him be a wild man, that's enjoyable. And it just got goofier and funnier and weirder over the course of the 8 episodes. And honestly, I would rather watch that. Like, I'd rather watch that than like, we're doing another straightforward across the board. This is a superhero movie. The entire world is at stake. And then we split it into 8 episodes. Instead, go weird. Give us the horror, universal horror episode and lead into it. That's more fun. I had a good time.
That horror episode was my favorite of the of the season. I loved it. Just the way they played with reality. I was like, man, if they did get David Lynch, RIP, to do a superhero, to do a cape, this would be it. Tommy, what do you think?
Yeah, similarly, I think that as the show got more Nick Cagey, it got more enjoyable for me. This was a show that I had almost no expectations for, to be perfectly honest with you. I was so stunned that it went from being announced to actually being made to being released. But as I think we'll probably talk about later, I do feel like if this movie was, or this show was being produced and financed by any other company other than Amazon, it would have died on the vine, because Amazon, we're about to see this weekend with Masters of the Universe, is willing to throw ungodly amounts of money at things to make them, to get them across the finish line. But I liked the show very, very much. I thought it was really fun. I thought the casting was like pretty pitch perfect. I mean, it's difficult to cast a show in 2026 or when they cast it in 2024 with actors trying to act as though they're in a thing being produced in the 40s, right? It's like, They asked to get some pretty outrageous performances, and I thought some landed more than others. But I thought overall, especially in the core casting, everybody was really terrific in it.
I mean, they made such strong choices. The guy who played Megawatt, like what he did with his voice, and he did the whole growl thing, and everybody speaks in a transatlantic accent. That wasn't a transatlantic accent, but everybody else did, except for the people who were putting on tough guy New York accents.
And the layering,
the people who talk like this, by the way, in case you're watching and you don't know. Sorry, Tom.
And I was just saying, in that detail, being that, you know, that he's an aspiring actor. So the transatlantic accent would be very important to him, I thought was interesting. Like, it's like, oh, he's also performing as Megawatt, right? Like, it's like he's doing a performance. But yeah, I thought that was really fun. So I'll give you a little inside baseball. When this show came out, I actually auditioned for it twice. I did not audition for Megawatt, but I auditioned for one of the henchmen that doesn't get knocked off early on in the season. And I auditioned, I believe, to be a bartender in it. And I did not go as deep into the noir style. I figured out what the show was, even though it was under a coded name and all the names were changed and there was no mention of any spider entities in it. But I did not realize how heavily they were going to lean into everyone else's performances being, you know, this is a show that this could have been released 70, 80 years ago. So,
well, if you're going for a bartender, I guess the bartender from like It's a Wonderful Life would have been the way to go. All right, you two pixies out the door, out the window. It's up to you, like that.
But I mean, to the point, you don't expect that, right? Like, you expect them to be like, "Yeah, we're going to kind of make it look like film noir, but it's a show that we filmed right now." But they go for it.
Well, you know, I think. Yeah, sorry. I think an example that I think of is like that didn't always do this was Boardwalk Empire. Like, Boardwalk Empire had people that were straight up performing like it was 2014 sometimes. Like, there were some characters, and the guy who played Al Capone, who's a great English actor, leaned very heavily into the, like, gangster, see, hey, come on, we're doing all this. Mm-hmm. But it was like, there were other characters who played kind of just the people in that world that didn't really put any affectation on it. Whereas I feel like
Steve Buscemi. Most,
yes, right.
Yeah,
he was kind of timeless in that performance.
Well, there's the whole internet thing of saying that actors in period pieces look like they have a face that's seen an iPhone. And I think they very specifically cast people in the show who do not. They look like heavies. Like, there's one of the guys who does not die is, what's his name? Scott MacArthur, I think it is, who's a great comedic actor. He's, I think he was in the other two. He was also he's in Running Point on Netflix.
Right now. I love that guy. Yes.
Yeah. He's really funny. He does nothing in the show, like, to the point where I was like, why is he here? But part of the reason he's there is he looks right. He looks period appropriate, and he channels it.
Well, in part, it's interesting you bring up Boardwalk Empire because Jack Huston, who played, what was his name, Richard Harrow on Boardwalk Empire, is Sandman. He's older. He's gained a little bit of weight because he was like so gaunt in that show. Mm-hmm. And then both performances, you know, he just has that face. He's got that mustache that just makes you think like, yeah, this guy belongs in a poster from a movie in the 1930s. Beyond that, though, beyond like our thoughts on the casting, as far as this being like, because it is, it's a Sonyverse spinoff, right? These are like Madam Web. This is like Kraven the Hunter and all these things that we've hated and made fun of. I don't know how they could screw up Venom Horse, but they somehow did it. So this is a Sonyverse project, right? I'm curious if you guys think that the Sonyverse will continue. And before you keep going, before you answer, I do have this clip from Sony. I think he's the CEO now. Tom Rothman talking about the Sonyverse.
Where are we in the Spider-Man franchise? Not at the animated Spider-Verse. Is the larger Spider-Verse dead? Are you going to go back to those at some point?
Yes.
You will.
Yes.
But it'll be a fresh reboot.
Yes.
New people. Okay.
Yes.
So there you go. That to me says, they still think this is IP that they can milk and they're looking for ways to do it. I kind of think this is the way to do it. Do you think this is part of the plan? Do you think we're going to get like a Penny Parker anime movie? How far do you think they're going to take this?
I think the thing that they've always needed to do that maybe they're finally realizing after several decades is they just need to not get over their skis on any of this stuff. Like, every time Spider-Man is successful, they say, great news, we're going to make 16 other movies that don't have Spider-Man in it.
Right.
And they finally did that, and it did not work. So taking a step back and particularly turning to Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who have done so well with the Spider-Verse movies and are just two of the most reliable guys in entertainment, you know, kerfuffle with Star Wars aside, I think having them be behind the scenes and give them the time to do what they needed to do with Spider-Noir. I don't want to give them full credit, but certainly has to give them some credit there. And if they continue to allow them to be shepherds, perhaps take that approach, not do the thing that, not to call out any specific names, but like that Amy Pascal has done before, where they go on a red carpet and they're like, we're going to do a Scorpion movie. He's a real scorpion now. He's a large scorpion. That's the idea of the movie. And you're like, what? Why are you doing this?
Remember when the rhino became a rhino in the movie Kraven? Remember that?
One of the best parts of that movie, honestly.
I was just going to say, I hate to say it, that was the part of that movie that I do remember. <It's> like, I like that guy. He played that. He played the rhino so unhinged in that movie.
So far, they're two for two for with rhinos between him and Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti was more comic accurate. He definitely had that kind of little head. My favorite part of the rhino fight, though, is having it be referenced in No Way Home as I fought a man. How did he say it? I fought a man not in a rhino suit or a rhino costume, but he had a particular wording for it. No, I fought a man in a rhino costume. And that was a nice callback to that.
Yes.
What other aspects? So you mentioned Phil Lord and Chris Miller. So obviously just getting great creatives with a great track record and then letting them do their thing. And I think you're right. The Sonyverse has always had this thing where, okay, well, let's put a bunch of people in Amazing Spider-Man 2 and tease this Drew Goddard Sinister Six movie, which didn't need to happen. They could have just, Drew Goddard's a genius. They could just let him make a Sinister Six movie and not necessarily include tie-ins that bog down their current projects. Do you think, Tommy, do you think there's going to be any kind of other things like this, maybe spinoff of the Spider-Verse films or just micro focusing, like, or what would you like to see might be a better example?
Yeah, I think that what this show did is what I would like to see, in the sense that the movies in the Spider-Verse, not the animated, but like the live action Sony movies, they feel desperate to tie in to the Marvel Sony co-productions if they can. Rarely allowed to reference Marvel, but like they feel, and you see in Madam Web when obviously they reshoot and rewrite and start stripping things away, there's a vacuum left in there of like, this should be tying in our minds now, conditioned as, comic book movie lovers, are like looking for those tie-ins. I felt no pressure to do that during Spider-Noir. I felt like I could just enjoy the fact that they have this like five-decade-long careered movie star carrying, like, doing TV, and he's done so much good press explaining why he wanted to do TV and how he evolved into that opinion as a, person who always looked down upon TV, and then he watched Breaking Bad during COVID because his son told him, you have to watch this show, and he fell in love with Bryan Cranston's performance, and he became envious of Bryan Cranston having the time to take a season to explain and to perform the character and wanting to then do that. And then the thing that he does is Spider-Man. it's like he doesn't go to Vince Gilligan, or he doesn't go to David Chase or somebody like that. And is like, write me the most intense drama character. He's like, no, I'm going to do this fun animated. I'm going to do a live action version of this fun animated character that I probably spent 3 hours in a recording studio doing. Yes, the budget is astronomical on the show. So what I'm about to say doesn't make sense.
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah,
simple. Like, it was like, it didn't require me to do anything else but just enjoy what I was watching. And I feel like get some cachet with your viewers and your fans by making a couple of these that are really good. They don't have to give you like, this is Peter Parker's going to swing into this in season 3. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need that. I just love this stuff. And this show allowed me to just love it.
Nicolas Cage, though, he did this because he's one of us. Like, he's a comic book fan. I think he still goes to the shop on Wednesdays, or in my hometown Thursdays, because we were a day away from one day later than everybody else. The one thing I think about this show really has going for it is the no connections. I think, like MCU, I remember there was when Screen Crush really took off, we were doing WandaVision, explaining all this stuff. Then there was a meme that went around the internet that was like showing how, if the Lord of the Rings was made today, and it had like all these fake movies, about the tale of Vard from some Lake Town as his own movie, and Gollum's movie. And ironically, they're making a Gollum movie now. And that's when I first got the inkling that, like, on the popular level, on the Vox Populi, people were starting to get franchise fatigue and feel like they had homework, because there was never that Avengers movie or that payoff. Whereas the Fast and Furious franchise, it's just one franchise. I mean, they got the Hobbs and Shaw spinoff, but it's just that.
I think you make a good point. And I also think that when, just real quickly, when you insist upon tie-ins, and when you, like, you know, you set up all these tie-ins, you run the risk of getting kind of an unfair criticism of your film if those tie-ins don't work, you know, or if they're underwhelming. All of a sudden that becomes a criticism of a movie that doesn't really have anything to do with the actual movie itself. It's like, I didn't think that the way they set this up was good enough. And it's like, well, what did you think about the story that was told in the 2 hours that you were in the theater? But it's valid criticism because they put it out to the general public. So, you know, when you relieve yourself of that pressure, you also can't underwhelm anyone with it. You know what I mean? Like, when there's no promise of it, there's no chance of people being like, yeah, it was good. But the way they tried to tie it into, like, you know, whatever, a Gwenpool didn't work for me. Like,
right.
Well, yeah, one of the smartest things I think they did, which was a little janky, but they had to do it, was that narration right at the top of the first episode where he says, somebody asked me what universe this was. And I kept waiting for them to come back to that. I'm waiting for, like, Miguel O'Hara to approach him in the post-credit scene. And they didn't do any of that. And that's so great. I know, I was relieved, because then the conversation about it becomes, ooh, how does this set up Beyond the Spider-Verse? Not about the show itself, which told the beginning, to Tommy's point, beginning, middle, and end of a story all in and of itself.
It would have been pretty bad if, we'll get to season two in a second, but it would have been pretty bad if they would have forced in another character, or like if Felicia Hardy would have been, I don't know, bitten by a magical cat and gotten the black cat powers at some point during this. It just wouldn't have worked. I think the right way to do these connections, we're working on the Captain America Civil War breakdown now. That movie does it perfectly because it takes the characters of Spider-Man and Black Panther and it makes them important to the story they're telling. Instead of Amazing Spider-Man 2 is probably the worst ever because it's literally just like walking down a hallway or shoehorning in the Green Goblin when really the movie didn't need him, you know, and was a big distraction. Do you guys, based on this, so let's assume that the next thing is this good, right? Where they commit to the genre and everything this much. Do you have a Sony-verse spinoff, apart from Kraven 2, which we all want, that you would really like for them to make based on, like, spider stories? In fact, the other day, Alex, you mentioned an R-rated, a mature-only Spider-Man movie that sounds terrible, a comic that sounds terrible to me that I would never want to see. Yeah. But is there something you guys want to see, though?
Well, this is actually going backwards, but the project they didn't end up doing, Silk, which was going to be show run by Angela Kang of Walking Dead. I was very interested in that. I used to cover Walking Dead a ton, talk to Angela Kang a lot. She's a very smart writer, very thoughtful, and really took that show from a janky couple of seasons to give it a pretty satisfying ending at the end of the day. So I was excited to see what she was going to do with Silk. And when they canceled that, I was a little bummed. For people that don't know, I don't know what they were going to do in the show, but the basic thing about Silk was she was also bit by the spider that bit Peter Parker and was then locked in a bunker by her parents for decades. So she didn't experience the outside world. And that's why you didn't know that she existed before then. But she has the same powers. There's, I think, some agoraphobia going on there, if I remember correctly. And I don't know. It would have been interesting to see that. Maybe they went for the Nicolas Cage thing instead because they could sell a movie star in there versus potentially whoever was going to do Silk. But I don't know, maybe if Spider-Noir is successful, they can go back and reassess that because I think it was an interesting project.
Silk had a bit of a controversial thing too. Dan Slott, who created the character years later, said he regretted, there's one thing about Silk where she and Peter are always horny for each other because they were bitten by the same spider. He said he regretted that because it played into Asian stereotypes, which I was not even aware of those stereotypes until Dan Slott apologized for them. But still, I presume if Spider-Man wouldn't even have been in it, so that wouldn't have been a thing in the series. But interesting. Tommy, were you going to chime in?
Well, yeah, I just think, like, on a fun side, I would love if they did an animated Spider-Ham series. Like, if they just did a...
Oh, that'd be great!
20-minute episodes of Spider-Ham's world. Like, I think that also is something they could do relatively easily. Like, not... I mean, it's tough to do animation, but it's, like, that's not a huge, ambitious project that could be done really well. Give us, like, you know, 10 episodes of an animated Spider-Ham series and get more goodwill. And then maybe, you know, try something more ambitious a couple years down the line.
I would like to see a Spider-Ham series done in the style and animation quality of a Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe because I've been watching a lot of He-Man stuff lately for the video we put out today. But that to me, if you go back to that, because there were some great, like Beetlejuice was a great Saturday morning cartoon, and it was a lot of fun and kind of manic. Animaniacs, you know, I think there are creatives out there who you could hand that to, and that would be fantastic. But I think what they run into with streaming is they'll do the absolute minimum number of episodes that they can get away with and call it a season of television so they can keep costs down. Because they want you to subscribe to see that show, and they don't care if you keep watching after that. But Spider-Ham would be great. In terms of live action, maybe this is just me thinking, okay, well, period dramas, what else can we do? I love the idea, if they were ever going to do a Silver Sable story. Silver Sable is one of the few characters they were talking about doing a spinoff with, where I was like, that kind of makes sense. Because she's, you know, got this international espionage thing. She's tied to her home country. She is a character who you feel like was on her own journey, and then her journey wandered into Spider-Man's, whereas everybody else tends to just revolve around Spider-Man. So I thought maybe something set in the 1960s, do some Cold War espionage. That would be really fun. Catch me if you can, but in a spider-ish universe, something to Spider-Man, I think.
Can I throw two more quick ideas onto the pile while we're doing dream stuff?
Yes.
One, I think it would be fun to have a Daily Bugle show.
Yes, you know? I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, man. Yes.
From their perspective, it's vacations. It's kind of like Gotham Central, the comic book where the cops were like, God damn it, that Batman, I hate that. And that book was great. They took a lot of that and used that for Gotham and then kind of threw it
out. I thought that's all Gotham should have been, but that's 100%. A different rant.
But that would be super fun. The other one, which 100% never happened for reasons that will become abundantly obvious when I say this out loud, but I legitimately think a great live action show would be Madame Web. The setup that you have at the end there, it's Charlie's Angels, right? Like Madame Web sends them out on missions every single week, those three spider girls. That would be super fun.
And they are also, at this point, big stars. I mean, how hilarious is it that Sydney Sweeney did a superhero movie and that's the one it was? Yeah. That's absolutely crazy to me. Or Isabella Merced. And I cannot remember the other actor's name, but she's also very great. All right, let me ask you guys, let's talk about the budget real quick. But before we get to the budget, I want to remind everybody that you can become a member at our merch store. And at our $5 tier, you get a whole bunch of stuff in tier one. Badges, emojis, priority comments, responses, but also exclusive videos. We've put up one video already. It's like The Adventures of Doug. It's a series of short films, and he goes off from the store. He does his own thing. It's a lot of fun. I should have put B-roll on it to show you guys. We're also doing monthly watch parties. Next one we're going to do is X2, but it's not scheduled yet. And early access to some of our videos. And the big one, the 15% merch store discount. I'm also wanting to do more videos to kind of take you guys behind the scenes of Screen Crush. I think if you're a member, you'd be into that. So for instance, I found a video the other day that is, I went through all the Rocky movies and in the fight scenes, and I cut out all the boxing. and I just made a supercut, and I showed it to editor-in-chief Matt Singer, who was like approving videos at the time. And he just responded, "This is weird, dude." And I'm like, it is weird. But in hindsight, looking back at it, I'm like, that's kind of a deleted video, and I think we're going to add commentary to it, so we're going to add that kind of thing too for Screen Crush members. And actually, for the $100 tier, we do have a couple of members already, and one of them is already posting on our live chat right now. So we'll get to the super chats in just a second. Thanks, Armand. And we do a monthly Q&A. We had our first one the other day. It was a lot of fun. I love getting to meet the little people and just talking to them. It's a private Q&A on Zoom if you sign up at that tier, which is also a lot of fun. Store owner tier. Thanks, guys. And also, there's merch linked below. You know, buy our merch. It's all great. We got boys merch, like the Laser Baby, and we got original trilogy merch. And we haven't updated the merch on the slides for StreamYard yet, but I promise that we will. So let's talk about the budget for this thing, guys. $400 million. That's crazy. Some outlets are saying that number is exaggerated, but here's where this news comes from, okay? A stunt member who worked on Spider-Man Noir claimed that they shot on a true noir set with most of the buildings painted green, brown, and pink to contrast better in black and white. The color pass was originally not planned and required a year of reshoots and new sets to be built. We do have a still for this I was supposed to put up the whole time. Another crew member named Arsenio J. Alvarez, badass name, by the way, specifically said it was Amazon who wanted the color pass and not Sony because they produced it together. So because of this, the rumored budget for the first season was $400 million, although some outlets are saying that number is exaggerated. Holy crap. Can you imagine that? How in the hell did they start off in black and white and then the studio noticed?
It's fascinating to me because my understanding without knowing the technology was that True Hue, which is what they refer to the color version as, was just they went in and digitally colored the black and white film. And I guess I didn't realize that they had shot everything twice.
Well, they didn't exactly. There's so many weird conflicting reports about this, including this Threads post that we put up here. It's very confusing because I had heard Nicolas Cage has said in interviews that the color was because of him, that he specifically felt like teens, he said, didn't want to watch black and white, so he wanted to make sure there was a color version. There was a story, I want to say it was in Esquire, before the show came out, where they talked about that they basically used this tech where they shot it with two plates in the same camera. So they did shoot it in black and white, but were able to get it in color digitally as well at the same time. And then what they did was kind of turn it up a little bit. And so that's why I was surprised to see this Threads post, because the way that I understood it is like they lit everything for black and white. They shot it for black and white, but because they knew it was going to be in color, when you do watch it in color, you see it's not the pinks and greens and all the things that you do for faking for black and white. It is coats that pop and backgrounds that pop and things like that. So I'm not sure exactly what is the truth here.
Right. Probably somewhere, something in the middle.
Exactly.
But I will say, like I said at the beginning of this video, you know, we have Amazon co-producing Masters of the Universe this weekend as well. And by all accounts, I think the budget, they said, is somewhere between $200 and $250 million for it. And I don't think there was ever a world where they imagined that it would make, like, its opening box office would make even half of that, maybe half, but like, you know, I think estimations for it are coming in around like 40 to 50 million for this weekend. And they seem fine with it. Like, it's like Amazon. I mean, it's Jeff Bezos is one of the richest men in the world. He's the leader of Amazon, obviously. So it feels to me, like I said, that like, I can almost believe that the budget ballooned to 400 million. I doubt it's that actual number, but I bet you that they started with a pretty substantial budget as well, because Amazon is like, much like Netflix, is one of the few studios that is still throwing huge amounts of money at projects and just kind of being like, "Go make it." Yeah, Apple too. Yeah.
Apple's close the purse strings a bit, but they do as well. I kind of think with He-Man, they probably looked at it and said, "Well, it's Mattel. It's another Barbie thing. So this now will do a Barbie that appeals to the male market," which, by the way, is incredibly silly because Barbie is a fantastic film, whether you're
amazing
playing with them or not. Yeah. Well, this movie, not as good. But I do.
I know this isn't a Masters of the Universe box office stream or anything like that. But I think the other part of it, which you can't discount, is they're selling toys off of it on Amazon. So that's how ultimately they're not going to make as much money on the movie. But yeah, they're going to get to that. And I don't know how that feeds into Spider-Noir, because I doubt the Spider-Man Noir comic books are flying off the Amazon shelves right now. But I don't know.
Well, again, like, think about when Spider-Noir would have been greenlit, right? So probably 2-3 years ago, right around the time Spider-Verse came out, was a huge hit. So I think that Sony was, you know, trying to shop it around, and they obviously, you know, maybe weren't looking to do Disney Plus because there's all these weird copyright things with TV and Marvel and Spider-Man. So in a lot of ways, Apple was the right fit because they would pour money into it just to have more exclusive, hate this word, but it is really content for their streaming service. And they don't really have any superhero stuff on there. So I think it's almost like, you know, you want that quadrant that they always talk about, where they need more of like thing X on their streaming service. So it feels like you have to have that streaming service. It's what HBO did for decades. That's how they attracted so many people.
Well, and that's why the release schedule for Spider-Noir is so weird to me, because what you're saying 100% makes sense. You have the people from The Boys at Invincible who are like, "Where's my next superhero show?" And just like, "Great. We're going to put it up one or two episodes on MGM Plus, which none of you subscribe to. And then we're going to dump every single episode in two different colors on Amazon instead of rolling it out weekly, when we would have been talking about this for 8 weeks." It's crazy to me.
I know. I never understand when streaming services will take a proven IP and do this. Now, with Netflix and their model, I get it a lot of the time. Like, if they would have dropped, say, Squid Game week by week, nobody would have ever watched it. You needed to binge that show. But again, I think it's because we think of the model for streaming in terms of longevity. You know, like, if we like a show that runs for 20 episodes and it releases every week, we look at that and go, "Well, I'll be subscribed for 20 weeks." They have data that probably shows that if there's a show on Netflix that I like and it's 8 episodes and I watch it in 2 days, I'm not going to cancel statistically right after. It's too much of a hassle to cancel. There's other stuff to watch. It'd be very weird to finish the last episode of something and go, huh, log into accounts. Let's right. do this. Like, nobody does that, you know? Right. And I think that they just bank on us forgetting we have subscriptions. Or, like you said, Alex, we've watched Invincible. We've watched The Boys. Oh, wait, don't leave yet. Here's Spider Noir. And then it's, oh, don't leave yet, because we have Vought Rising. They always try to keep a constant stream of something. But honestly, like, I don't think a lot of people have finished the season yet anyways. Just based on like the metric I have right now of how many people are watching and the views on our review video, people are taking their time, and I'm glad, because I don't think this is a show you should binge watch and you know, watch from your phone like this. Let's get to a couple super chats here, guys. Armand, who I believe is one of our store owner members, thank you so much, gave us £5 and said, hot take, the color version is very good. The collars and suits all felt right for the era and not at all like it's an afterthought. The color grading is fun. Do you guys have a preference?
Black and white, 100% for me. They definitely lit it for that. They definitely made it for that. The color stuff, I agree, when they're on set, looks really good. The problem for me is the second they get outside, the lighting is all off. Like, particularly there was one scene that really stuck with me where Lamorne Morris and Nicolas Cage are sitting on a park bench outside on their back lot, and you can just see the makeup caked on Nicolas Cage. The hair looks fake and everything. Yeah, and it's like, this isn't working.
Yeah, Tommy? I agree. Black and white's the way to go with it. Although I did watch probably the majority of it in the true hue color, because I am a teenager at heart.
I watched most of it in color just for Easter egg observation, because I noticed when I watched the trailer, I missed a few things that were in black and white. So I am now going to get to go rewatch it in color or in black and white with my wife. I will say, you and Alex, that's a great observation about like the fight at the end between him and Megawatt out in the street does not look great. And I haven't seen it in black and white yet. I did think, however, the scene where Kat sings in the club is fantastic in color. I mean, it really pops to the point where I would tell everybody, just go watch that scene in color. That's really great. But yeah, they definitely had a palette of pulp magazine covers and they stuck to it.
Yeah. And I mean, about the fight thing, I will say, since I sort of switched back and forth and I ended up watching not the show completely twice, but like tried to watch most of it in color and most of it in black and white. The black and white really smooths over a lot of the fight stuff. Like the car fight in the second episode, is it? Yeah. The third episode looks great in black and white. Once you switch over to color, you're like, I don't know about this. I don't know. This looks a little fakey. And it emphasizes the whole goofy Batman 66 nature of some of it. And that's good. So if you do prefer color, more power to you. But I would say black and white all day, every day.
I just think Nicolas Cage wasn't performing for, he may have said we should do a color version, but his performance is not for a color movie. It just isn't. Like, it is like, hey, you know, like doing that whole like growl. Like, I couldn't even find a detective and be like, that's not what Humphrey Bogart actually sounds like in The Maltese Falcon, but that's what we think he sounds like in The Maltese Falcon.
My favorite thing about this is that he goes another layer in when he's in person, when he's trying to break into the apartment complex and he calls himself Boris Karloff. And then he's like, oh, maybe it's under my stage name.
Stein.
Frank N.
That was the
part
where
it was very Beverly Hills Cop.
All of that and him going and talking to the different cops and using a different accent each time was so crazy to me, because I'm like, you're already in a film noir pastiche and now you're doing film noir accents in the, this is wild. It's great.
And he knew what he was doing, man. He understood 100%. The assignment. Phil Aremba from Down Under gave us $8 Australian and said, love the show. The noir aesthetic was pitch perfect. The framing beautiful and the performance is captivating. Lots of pays for Doug. Well, I'll pass that on to Doug here in a minute. Doug got some shots this week. He didn't react well to them, so I had to give him some extra attention this week. He's doing great now. He's up and running around. He was shaking. I looked down at him. He was like shaking from fever, and I was like, my dog's dying. But he's doing good now. I'll pass on that treat for him. Yeah, all around, it's weird because I feel like bad superhero things that come out actually do more damage than the good things do good at this point, because people are, maybe you can call it superhero fatigue, maybe you can call it mid fatigue, but it seems like when something truly great comes out, it doesn't get like the popular attention that things used to, like with WandaVision and stuff like that, where everybody was talking about it, which could just be that we're numb to it. I don't know. I'm curious how that passes on to Star Wars, but go ahead.
Yes, for sure. And I also think, though, that there is a rush to declare something not being talked about on the internet. Because I can't tell you how many times on X, when I looked for Spider-Noir discourse, there was a tweet that was some flavor posted over and over again by, like, why am I not hearing anyone talk about Spider-Noir, with like 50 response. I mean, it's great engagement bait, because 50 responses. Yeah. That's all everyone's talking about. Like, anyone I that watches stuff like this is talking about it. So I feel like, I think that the binge release of this is hurting its, like, being a phenomenon in terms of people talking about it. Like, I think if it was building and we were, like, you know, getting to enjoy this weekly, or do it like how The Boys used to do it, where it was like drop 2 1 week or 3 to start, and then, you know, get everyone hooked on it and then release them week by week. But I do think some of the thing, like, there's an urge anytime something comes out, whether it's a movie, to declare it dead at the box office after Thursday night previews, or if it's a TV show, to declare it nobody's watching it, because it's going to guarantee that you get engagement on it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it also, I mean, there's a lot of things going on there. One, the conversation I feel like has turned from superhero fatigue to just franchise IP fatigue more than anything. You know, we've been talking about that a lot with Backrooms, Obsession. There's the Amazing Digital Circus.
And the MonsterVerse is another proof of that. And the Fast movies, which used to be billion-dollar behemoths, they're all kind of losing steam. Sputter to the end,
The audience is tired of it. They're tired of feeling like, God, I got to see this for my homework. This is my job to do this thing, rather than this is the fun thing I can relax and see. And so whether it's good or not, it almost doesn't matter. And clearly the three of us like Spider-Noir, and mostly everybody I've talked to also like Spider-Noir, but that's a wall where people are like, I don't want to see that. And it's a bummer, because this is the first time in, what is it, 50 years or so that we've had a live action Spider-Man show. And they should have been treating it like that instead of, mind you, it is a weird project when you're like, oh, it's a live action Spider-Man show that's set in 1933, starring Nicolas Cage as a film noir Spider-Man called not Spider-Man, but the Spider. Also, he's not Peter Parker. He's Ben Reilly. Also, he's a different character than he was in animation. Enjoy. So, like, there's a lot of.
Oh, and also you can watch in two different ways. It's black and white, and it's color. Yeah.
Unless you have a hat on a hat. It's too many things. Like, so there are a lot of walls there for people to get into this specific show, but I don't know. I feel like there was a way for them to sell it or figure out just being like, check out the first live action Spider-Man show in 50 years. And that would have been cool to people, because generally people like Spider-Man.
To that point, Armand also adds for £2, it's a miracle that this show is not a surf Dracula. It really, it is crazy. So you see something like this, you hear about it, you go, oh boy, I remember there have been so many things I have heard about. Hell, when I heard the title WandaVision, I thought, that sounds awful. God, what are they doing? You know, I love when I'm wrong about stuff. This thing I was never questioning. I was like, if this is a real project and not just a dumb rumor I've heard, I think it's going to be great. Gio Katsi gave us €5 and said the way to go for Sony is the opposite of Marvel. You have the animated movies plus characters and expand their story or backstory in individual shows. I don't think it's the opposite. I kind of think that's what Marvel does. I think they have the I understand what they mean by that, though. Marvel definitely, like, would start with the big project like Civil War and then spin characters off from that. I just think if you make something and it works and people like it, stick with it. I think it's that simple. Whatever grabs people's imagination. You had Nicolas Cage voicing an animated character and he wanted to keep doing it. Take the win.
And like we were talking about earlier, just have a bunch of things that are not connected. They're all in their own universes. They're all their own shows running. People will accept it. And if they do work, you know, let's say, random example, you put out 5 shows, 2 of them work, 3 of them don't work. Follow those 2 shows. Those 2 shows can cross over then, and you don't have to worry about the other 3.
I don't feel like you're obligated to go back to the Incredible Hulk, 16 years later. Ric Flair Hairs gave us $5 and says, hey, Tommy, can we get a Ric Flair woo as Nick Cage?
Wow, that's layered. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. You're an actor. Act.
Well, I'm a high flying, limousine driving, wheeling, dealing, kiss stealing son of a bitch. Woo!
Very good. Very good. I got asked to do a Who Day earlier. You know, my wife wrote this play with Colby Menifee in it, and Alice. Oh my God, what's last? Whatever.
Kremelberg.
The tickets are on sale now. Yeah, Kremelberg. Thank you. And Alice Kremelberg, named Camping. And I got to do a voice I hope makes it in. I got to do an old Who Day chant. I'm like, well, yes. Do that in my sleep. That's from the 90s. And Phil Aremba from Down Under gave us $3 Australian and said that should have been Pat's typo from earlier. You didn't have to pay the money just to correct your typo, but we do appreciate it. Let me ask you guys this. So I look at this movie too, and I think this is how the multiverse could have been done the whole time. This is how the multiverse, if you're doing the multiverse saga, you could have done maybe a Doctor Strange movie. I brought this up in our review. Where instead of it being about the continuing adventures of the Doctor Strange, we know the whole thing is about the alternate universe version of Steven that turns evil, and then our Steven encounters him at the end. I'm not saying they should have done that, but there are so many possibilities. I like to throw out a Shang-Chi movie that takes place in the gritty 1970s New York, a la Joker, but that is, of course, when Shang-Chi first became a comic, following the Kung Fu craze of the 70s. Spider-Man 2099 is another example. Just the whole 2099 universe from the 90s with like the cyberpunk Blade Runner look to it was awesome. And I feel like now we're at the end of the multiverse saga and it never really got going as a multiverse saga. I mean, what do you guys think? Is this, do we think that we would have liked to have seen more of these, or what projects would you have liked to have seen?
I mean, definitely. I think you're absolutely right. Like, part of the problem with the multiverse saga as it is there aren't enough multiverses in the multiverse saga. Like, we have the MCU. Mm-hmm. We have the universe where everything is paint. We have the, I'm forgetting the number designation, but we have the place that they went to with the Illuminati in Doctor Strange. And they go there. And then
there's the what if, and you know, and all those, you know,
yeah, but stuff on they the weren't going to bring in X-Men. Any of those. And like, we're talking about the live action TV shows, I think, and the movies, because the what if thing always felt very much the side, and they should have gone crazier, like you were saying, had more multiverses so they didn't have to pull that emergency ripcord of bringing in the older X-Men at the end to give us some sort of emotional stakes with another universe. We've barely had any time to get to know the Fantastic Four or their universe. We've had one movie for it. So for it to be a multiverse saga, there should have been more multiverse, and there just wasn't.
Yeah, I think for me, my issue is that when we do have, this is the multiverse saga, and when we do have movies that are take place in different multiverses, we tend not to stay in any other different multiverse long enough. It's like they're literally falling through them in that one scene in Multiverse of Madness. And yes, we stay in 838 for a while, but like I would almost prefer to see what's going on in that universe or in that multiverse before our protagonists enter it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's almost like they imagine it's like a movie styling where like everything stops once they leave the room, and only life resumes once they walk back. Once Stephen Strange enters the multiverse, then people start moving around and doing stuff. It's like, I think if they took their time and established different multiverses in these movies, it would have been a more satisfying conclusion. Whereas instead, we're kind of left with a couple of montages and one Fantastic Four movie and one 25-minute sequence on 838.
And what if and Loki doing all the heavy lifting for explaining all this too? Yeah, it's the same thing we keep talking about with the multiverse saga. Like, they just, when you get a mandate from corporate that says we want you to do X number of hours, double the number of hours, whatever it is, you just kind of reach a logistical point where you actually can't do Avengers movies. Like, you can't schedule that many people together. You can't make that movie while you're also making all of these shows. So we did miss out on some cool crossover opportunities. Like, I keep thinking about like Moon Knight and Ramatut, like two just kind of fit. Like, Khonshu could have been appearing in a Kang project or something like that. But I'm also just like lamenting that there's all this great multiversal stuff from the comics and all this other great stuff, like the three generations of Thors that appear in the Jason Aaron run, that could have just been part of time travel stories that had the luxury of a little bit more breath, they could have planned out. And I guess that's the great thing about what Sony has going on. They don't have a ticking time bomb of an Avengers movie they have to build toward. they can literally at this point wait for the right script. And I don't think their corporate was doing that before. I think they were saying, no, we got to get our movies out. We got to do our crossover. We need our Avengers movie. And now, hell, they're partnered with Amazon. They got all the money in the world on this shit, so they can take all the time they want.
I hope they do. I hope they actually take that beat and think about it and don't suddenly panic and pull back to, oh, we got to do a Null thing again, and we got to bring back Kraven, and we got to do the El Muerto movie to tie in, and we got to find out what's going on with Morbius and that cornfield and whatever is going on there.
Remember like, El Muerto with Bad Bunny? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I heard of that character for the first time. And that's pretty rare for me. When they announce something, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I've at least, you know, you're aware in the comics, you've heard of people if you haven't picked up the actual issue. But I was like, the hell is that? Jordan Enrique gave us $5 and said, so is he Peter Parker? Because Freckles mentions that he couldn't find him because Nicolas Cage changed his name to Ben Reilly. Yeah, he's Peter Parker. Right. I think that was a cool way for them to acknowledge it legally. They didn't
say Peter Parker, though, right? They didn't say what his actual name was. They just said that he changed his name. That was such that moment in Madame Web where they could never say the baby's name is Peter Parker that drew me off the wall. I'm like, come on.
They should have, in Madame Web, they should have called him the child.
The vessel. My little hero.
Yeah. Grogu Parker.
Ben Reilly. Yes,
Grogu Parker.
Oh, man. That movie, I don't know if you guys have watched Madame Web lately, but I swear to God, watching her not open a Pepsi can, and I think people make fun of her to be like, she doesn't know how. And I think, no. I think it's because they wanted her to do it and drink the delicious Pepsi, and she was so overworking on the shitty movie that she refused to do it. And in every case,
I will swear, and people might flame me for this. Madame Web is maybe the most fun I had in a superhero movie that entire year. Like, it's legitimately a good time in the movie theater. I was laughing and howling the entire time. And like, Dakota Johnson, very funny. I will swear by that.
Did you see the critic screening of Madame Web?
No.
Okay, so I went to the critic screen. Now, you normally went in New York, you get invited to these screenings, and they have them at AMC. Big, you know, they invite a lot of people. This particular screening was at like a really nice corporate office in a very small screening room. It's like what I imagine like rich people, their size screening room, like the White House screening room. It doesn't exist anymore. But like that's the size that it was. So it was very few critics howling because the critics are catching all the technical things like the bad ADR from Ezekiel and stuff like that. That is like the most I've ever felt connected to my peer group in this industry. It was great. And like immediately Harriet, who saw the movie with me, our one of our producers, like invited friends over to go watch it. Like for her, I think it's become an annual thing for her since then, man. Craven's got its fair share too, though. When Calypso says, my grandmother died. I never saw her after that.
Yeah.
Have I told you guys my Craven story when I was?
I love this story. Tell it again for
now. I haven't heard it.
So I was at the world premiere. It was in New York, and a couple things little things I want to know. Aaron Taylor Johnson knew he was in a turd burger, but did not like walk out at the end. Stayed, talked to press, smiled, did the whole thing. He was like a real class act about it. So I have a lot of respect for how that guy handled himself at this thing. The guy who played young Craven, I saw him coming back from the bathroom after, and he just not like nobody following him, nobody like, but he looked so sad. I felt so bad for him. But my favorite part of the story is when the director came out to introduce the movie and talk about it. He said, well, I just, how did he put it? He said, I can't thank you all for coming here tonight. I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you for coming here tonight. Like you could tell, like everyone just knew. I've never been at an event that big where people weren't. I'd be like the Ghostbusters Afterlife premiere. I went to that, right? I hated that movie, but the Ghostbusters were there, you know, like everybody was super pumped to be there. They thought they'd made a good movie. They're wrong. This movie, you could tell everybody was despondent about it.
God, no.
Which is why it's so cool that Aaron Taylor Johnson was such a class act about it. Everybody was like, they all did their job. By the way, I don't know who Ariana DeVos' agent is, but I hope that she's got new representation. Anyways, Monty G gave us $5 and said, just boosting. He's got this really nice. He gave $5 to boost somebody else's comment. DK Harry with a bunch of numbers says, I finally made it to Alive. Love you guys. Sorry, I'm just broke. And I too, Monty G, have been there at the level of just broke. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming to a live today.
Yes, thank you.
All right. I think we are going to wrap it up there. But before we do, one last thing to note. Nick Cage on season two. While speaking to Variety, Cage was not sure about a season two. He said, I don't know, but I would say, I can't do a Nicolas Cage impression, but I would say whether it happens or not, what I was doing there was I've never tried to do a Nicolas Cage impression. And I thought, maybe I got this. Maybe this is like the first time I did a Kermit and it'll just come out. So he said, I don't know, but I would say that whether it happens or not, all of us achieve what we set out to do, and it works on its own. We'll see what happens. So that's if Spider Noir was played by Nicolas Cage, was played by Kermit the Frog. I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they should do it. I'd love to see it be a one and done. Do you guys have any thoughts?
I just think it's...
Where would season two go, even, you know?
I would be happy to watch the second season because I had a fun time watching this first season. I think it's just production-wise too heavy of a lift. I mean, whether it cost $400 million or less than that, it still cost an insane amount of money. Mm-hmm. It took a ton of time. Nicolas Cage has also said in interviews that even though he did want to do TV, once he did 8 hours of TV, he was like, I'm good. That's 8 movies. I'm done now. So I don't know if he'd come back. He's also 62 years old at this point. So you're going down the road. You keep kicking it down the road. It's going to become harder and harder for him the further you go. But if they were to do it, there are a lot of storylines. They didn't touch on any of the storylines for the actual Spider-Man Noir comics. So there are things that they could pull on there. They didn't bring in the Goblin, who is the next mob boss. I personally think it would be hilarious in the comics. Silvermane goes from a regular gangster to a old man head on a cyborg body. So what if he survives? What happens to him at the end of the season and he becomes a cyborg? That would be great.
He's got a steampunk body. That'd be great.
Oh my God.
Like
yes.
All gears, like please. Like the TikTok man and Return to Oz.
Love it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I forgot. Every time I think of that movie. Yeah.
It's scary. That movie is terrifying. It's
really scary. Yeah.
Trailers.
Yeah. That was a real thing that just happened. You actually watched a little bit of like spike trauma happen in my face just now. I got to go, guys. I got to sort this out in therapy. All right. Thank you guys so much. Oh, shit. Tommy, look at the time.
Oh, God. I got to get back to work. Fellas, thank you so much. My friend.
And by the way, enjoy casual bottom Fridays.
I will. Thank you. Always casual bottom over here. See ya.
Bye. Alex, thanks so much. You got anything coming up you want to let us know about?
Sure. I mentioned it the other day, but Tuesday at 7, we're going to have the team from IDW's The Horror of Godzilla, which is a black and white horror movie take on Godzilla from his origins. It's a pretty cool comic book. So that's going to be on the Comic Book Club channel.
Great. And do you interact much with Heather Antos, by the way? Long time.
I do. I've talked to her a bunch of times. I knew her from back in the day when we used to do the show live in a theater and she was still an assistant at Marvel. She used to come to the live show all the time. So she's great. She's killing
it. Yeah, she's great. When we started doing lives, it became suddenly really hard to get her on the show because she's a very busy person who travels a lot. Yeah. But anyways, check that out next Tuesday. We'll have the link for it down below. Thanks, Alex. And we want to hear from you guys. What did you think of Spider Noir? What other spider-related or multiverse-related projects would you like to see next? You can let me know down in the comments below or at me on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, or Substack, or on our free-to-join Discord server. And if it's your first time here, I guess you could subscribe and smash that bell for alerts. For Screen Crush, I'm Ryan Airy.